The Steve Cochran Show.
I made a mistake using a private email.
That's for sure.
I kind of assumed that there would be a lot of these charges and claims. And so he said back in 2006, gee, I hope it does collapse because then I can go in and buy some and make some money. Well, it did collapse.
That's called business, by the way.
Donald thinks that climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. I think it's real.
I do not say that.
And I think it's important that he even said, well, you know, if there were nuclear war in the East Asia, well, you know, that's fine. You know, have a good time, folks. Please go and take a look. Donald supported the invasion of Iraq.
Wrong.
That is absolutely
wrong.
Proved over and over again.
Wrong.
He actually advocated for the actions we took in Libya when it was negotiated, which I was not responsible for.
So is it President Obama's fault? Is it President Obama's fault?
Even announced. Not in more tax cuts that would add $5 trillion to the debt.
But you have
but
no plan.
Oh, I do. I have thought about this quite a bit.
Yeah, for 30
and
years.
You're wrong. No, I'm
Murders
not.
Murders are up.
I have a feeling that by the end of this evening, I'm going to be blamed for everything that's ever happened.
Why not? But you were totally out of control. I said, there's a person with a temperament that's got a problem.
Secretary Clinton.
Woo! Okay.
6:15. Hope you enjoyed the extended version last night of American Ninja Warriors, the political version. I don't think Trump made it up the 14-foot wall, did he?
I don't think so, no.
I just got back from the Trump victory party. Chiclets, some Kool-Aid, couple of streamers, nobody there. Rough night for Donald. I don't know that Hillary won it, but I know that he lost it. He lost it for the last 45 minutes. He had the wheels come off, and the real Donald came out. What's the thing with the Incredible Hulk where the Hulk would, is when he gets angry, he turns green? Because it seemed like right around 45 minutes after, he was decent in the beginning and threw her off her game. And right about the halfway point, the wheels came off for Donnie J.
I don't see him being a great poker player.
No, he turned a table over.
Well, plus his face.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't have a poker face.
Somebody in the Trump camp needed to prep Donald Trump on what a split screen is and
yeah,
and why his face would be on camera the entire time. Did he say my greatest asset is my face?
I didn't hear that one. Of course, I fall asleep for about 10 minutes.
I think he did.
Yeah.
I think he did. And if you notice, when he got his most heated at one stretch late in the debate, Hillary made eye contact with the viewer. She was looking right into the camera, staring right into the lens, not looking around.
No, she didn't engage him.
Nope.
Now, she was not great in the beginning, and she missed a couple of great chances to make points for herself and missed wildly. But then once she got him, he just was gone, just completely gone. We'll break it down. Pat Brady will be here. Eric Edelstein will be with us. He's actually in North Carolina working with some candidates there, but he'll be live on the phone.
Oh, okay.
Chuck Todd was scheduled to join us, but Chuck's busy this morning running around going, what the hell was I watching? So we'll catch up with you guys. We'll catch up with Chuck later in the week. And actually, I'll be gone after today. So it's up to you guys from here. I'm checking out a couple of places I think Trump may still deport me to. But after last night, he's got some serious catch up to get.
I don't think you can leave right now, Steve.
So you really? It's too dangerous.
I just think you need to stay here where we can keep an eye on you.
At 6:18, I do pay federal taxes. You know, we're not good at anniversaries around here, birthdays. Generally, we celebrate them a week late. We completely blew over the third anniversary of the show, you know, since my return and the third anniversary of the morning show. Forgot about it. It was right around Labor Day. But yesterday was Orion Samuelson's 56th anniversary of being on WGN. Now, Orion will be on today as previously scheduled, but I certainly should have recognized it yesterday.
I would have made a cake.
56 years.
Unbelievable.
Been on GN longer than I've been alive.
I believe, and you can ask him about this, I believe with Vin Scully retiring, Orion is now the longest tenured broadcaster in America.
I bet that's true.
I think he said that Vin was the only one who had a longer tenure.
Well, and here's the weird part. He's supposed to be, you know, slowing down a little bit and enjoying life. He just announced he's taking over for Vin Scully with the Dodgers.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah,
I
Orion Samuelson doing Dodgers.
I didn't think he wanted to travel that much.
No, he's not even that big a baseball fan necessarily. I'd be curious by text, kids, what you think at 312-981-7200. Trump win, lose, or draw. Hillary win, lose, or draw. Did you see Trump pumping the water last night?
Oh, yeah.
I thought, they're going to need a bathroom break.
He was
pounding. Well, what was
it
with the sniffling?
Yeah,
is that
like
a commentary, or is that, does he have allergies?
I think he has a cold. I think he's got a cold. I think he's got the sniffles.
And I'm sorry, Hillary, she never coughed at all. So I think she's fully recovered.
She looked fine. She never coughed. And she actually didn't drink water at all, which makes, there's a fine line in balance, right? If she wanted to show she's healthy, great. But the fact you don't drink water at all, at some point you go, she is a robot. She's not a human being.
Or a camel.
So I can tell you right now, at 55, standing up there for 90 minutes, drinking 3 bottles of water.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd make it.
Well, at least we know they have good knees.
That's true.
Yeah. You didn't have to sit down.
You said you pay your federal taxes. That makes you not smart, apparently.
Yes, that was an amazing moment.
Isn't that? And that kind of got glossed over.
I didn't get that.
Well,
at all.
Was a little quick, right? It was a little quick, but in the Trump freak show, there was a moment where she said, "Why don't you release your taxes?" It was off something Lester Holt had set up. And, we don't know how much you've paid. Maybe you've paid nothing. And he chimes in with, that makes me smart. Okay. I don't think, certainly the Trump supporters, who are hardworking regular folks, I don't think they want to hear that the rich guy doesn't pay taxes. I think it's a colossal mistake on his part. And you talk about making a commercial for her. Holy mackerel.
Oh, yeah. What a great citizen he is.
I'm surprised that hasn't... that'll be on TV in 5 minutes if it's not already. There were 3 or 4 moments last night where he just made TV commercials for her. His Rosie O'Donnell comment. It's such a window into his psyche that he thinks it's okay because a woman is heavy and loud that you can punch her out like you're in a bar fight. It says everything about who he is as a man. And I use the term man generously. And the bully stuff, once the wheels came off and the bully stuff where he's just shouting over her and talking over her, I thought she did a good job of not interrupting. But I will say this, in balance, I thought he won the first few minutes. And then I thought the 45 minutes mark to the end, he certainly lost. But I don't know that she won the debate. He lost it. You know that coach's adage, we beat ourselves? I think he absolutely beat himself.
I'm a big Lester Holt fan. Clearly, Trump did the deal where he's trying to take control and the excuse me, and it should Holt have been more forceful there and try to rein him back in?
Yeah, I thought there was a couple of spots where Lester let him go too far. Especially in the time part of it when he kept going over and he kept interrupting her. But he stayed out of it, and it was mostly them. Nobody's waking up this morning going, Lester Holt ruined it for me.
Right.
Nobody
right.
even knew he was there half the time.
Yeah, which is really kind of what the moderator ought to be doing in the big picture. Next one's a vice presidential debate. Then we get 2 more presidential debates. For anybody that wants to put a wrap on Donald and send him home, remember what President Obama looked like in 2012 when he essentially slept through the first debate. I think it was in Denver, wasn't it? Feels like it was in Colorado. Mm-hmm. But the first debate, absolutely a disaster for Obama. And I think he won. So
he did.
It ain't over. But Trump did himself no favors last night. And I was really, we'll take this up with Pat Brady when he comes in. I just was really surprised at, the fact that he turned into bad Donald. I really thought he would have had a handle on that.
What about when he was asked about his comment that Hillary Clinton did not look presidential, and he turned that into the temperament thing?
Yeah, well,
he didn't answer the question at all.
In the last 30 minutes, he made no sense whatsoever. He was gone. He was answering questions that hadn't been asked. He was answering questions that were asked 20 minutes ago. He was doing a completely different debate. But he didn't look present. One of her best moments was the stamina. He doesn't like China, and he doesn't think she has stamina. But when she said, well, when he goes to 140 countries and he sits through an 11-hour congressional hearing, he can talk to me about stamina. That was a home run. Mm-hmm. And that's preparation, because that's mock debate stuff where somebody throws the line at her, she hits it back. What about this? How about the fact he doesn't bring up deplorables? Deplorables was a horrible moment for her. That comment about half his supporters in a big basket of deplorables. He never worked it in. You never heard anything about the wall last night. Immigration, right. His central issue.
Right.
It's not Lester Holt's job to bring that stuff up. It's Trump's job to work that stuff in. And you have to know your spots to work it in by debate practice.
He was trying, I think, to get sympathy as the aggrieved party in the Hillary television spots, the offensive television spots that are hurtful to him.
I didn't know about this. Trump complained about the mic. All right, roll this.
And they also gave me a defective mic. Did you notice that?
No.
My mic was defective within the room.
So that guy's not getting paid.
No, but I wonder, was that on purpose?
Who knows?
Was that on purpose? But I had a mic that wasn't working properly within the room. But overall, I thought it was a great. You look at all of your polls.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
What
was wrong with the mic?
Mic was defective.
Within the room, maybe they had some PA problems within the room.
Does he not understand that the audience isn't supposed to applaud? Because maybe that's what he thought. Maybe he thought the audience wasn't hearing him, and that's why they weren't responding to him.
And then the interviewing say, well, that guy's not getting paid, which is a reference to Hillary's charge that he stiffed all these workers.
Yeah, she actually had one of the architects in the room that he stiffed. You know, we got a guy here who's a Florida guy and a West Palm guy who works with us. And he told me months and months ago, he said the absolute known fact among contractors in and around West Palm is don't work for Trump because you get 2/3 of your money. You know, his go-to move is you come in, you do landscaping, and I agree to pay you $10,000. Well, I give you $7,000, and I say, I'm not sure I like the job that you did. If you don't like it, sue me. And if you're a small business, the idea that you're going to take them to court, try to collect your additional three when you probably have five in legal fees, you're not going to do it. So you end up doing all the work for less money. And that according, again, this is months before any of this came out publicly from someone from Florida, said that's Trump's go-to move. So not a good night for Donald in the end. And, of course, what do you want? You want to leave people with the impression that it went well. So you want to flip those 45 minutes. Maybe you have a rough start, but then a strong finish. That's not the way it went down.
I enjoyed your live tweeting.
Thank you.
It was very good, including his plugs for his hotels.
How about that? And she worked at a book plug. She went full weasel, too. And she even said you could pick it up at the airport.
Yeah.
I'll be at the airport today.
I love that line. I thought that was hilarious. She was actually funny there.
I tweeted this out last night, and I believe it to be true. At some point when the yelling was going on, somewhere in New Jersey, Brian Williams is sitting back going, thank God I'm a big fat liar.
Yes.
6:28. Do we need a break for the big story? All right, let's do that now on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
More Trump Hillary coming up, but I want you to meet that brand new Kid of the Week. We do this every week. And just a couple of months away now, Mary Vanderbilt and Dave Innitt will pick a Kid of the Year.
When are we doing that?
Well, we thought we'd do it at the end of the year. Thought we'd, you know, go through all the kids of the week and then do it.
I think I'm kind of booked up.
I don't like your chances of getting out of this because you guys did such a good job last year.
No, I wouldn't want to get out of it.
No,
I look forward
thing,
to it.
But,
it's
man,
an honor for both of you, isn't
so
it?
So hard.
Yeah, it should be.
So many great kids.
Do you know a child that goes above and beyond for themselves, for their community, for their school, for whatever? Just a kid involved in some good news. Go to WGNradio.com/contest. Submit an entry for a kid between 5 and 18. You think ought to be Kid of the Week? We'll choose that Kid of the Year from all of our annual or our weekly winners. 2016 Kid of the Year gets a $5,000 prize courtesy of Ray Chevy in Fox Lake and Raymond Chevy in Antioch. See the whole inventory, all of it, at rayandraymonddeals.com. Go online to wgnradio.com/contest to submit your entry. Joining us on the phone, this week's Kid of the Week with a very famous name. Good morning, Juan. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Nice to talk to you. Juan Valdez.
Yes.
you know the famous Juan Valdez, right?
Yeah, I've been getting it since third grade.
I'll bet you have. Never gets old, does it?
Nope.
All right, let's start with the fact that, at least I think I'm right about this. Did you watch the debate last night?
I watched a couple minutes of it, then I said, you know what, there's some things that are important right now, and this is not something I should be doing.
So you had other things you had to get done because you have priorities.
Yes.
All right. Do you have any sense politically of who you support or any of the kids your age talking about this stuff?
All the time. I mean, right now, I'm obviously trying to stay away from that. But, yeah, I mean, I'm a huge Clinton supporter.
Mm-hmm. And do you have friends your age that are supporting Trump or Gary Johnson?
No.
Okay.
Surprisingly.
All right. So let's talk about an award that your school won, the National AP District of the Year Award. Your school's won the award, the College Board for increasing the number of students in the AP program. You're taking AP classes?
Yes. This year I'm taking all AP.
All right. AP, for those of you that don't know, Dave, you probably don't remember AP.
I do.
Advanced placement classes. It's college classes in high school.
Right.
Yes.
What are you taking, one?
Which ones I'm taking?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm taking microeconomics, AP government, AP statistics, calculus, AB, bio, and AP literature.
You know what? That's what I do on the weekend.
Yeah.
Yep, basically.
Wow. And that's a lot of homework, isn't it?
Yes. A lot of studying too.
What is your real strength? Is it math?
Math and science.
What do you think you want to do with it?
I want to pursue a career in biomedical engineering.
What job would that be? I'm a talk show host. You're gonna have to explain this.
Oh yeah,
to me.
Like it's part of it's kind of like you basically make prosthetic legs.
Wow.
Create machines for the medical field. I'm really passionate about that.
That was my son's major.
And is that
he is
right?
A biomed engineer now. Yes, he's in his second year of work, and he loves it.
Smart
good for
kids.
You.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Good for you. So your school, tell me a little bit about your school.
Well, here at Morton West, the tremendous school spirit, you know, hashtag Morton Pride has become a rally cry for our students, teachers, and the entire community. We have this is hashtag Morton Pride YouTube channel with a series of Sports Center-like commercials about students and staff hardworking, doing the great things, and just enjoying being Morton Mustangs, you know? Hashtag Morton Pride is all over the schools, even on our ID lanyards.
Well, that's good, and that's a great way to boost that pride. Are you are you school president? Because, you know, you ought to be class president.
I'm a National Honor Society president and freshman mentoring program vice president.
Where's all your leadership and your drive come from? Moms, dads, uncles, aunts?
My mom.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely my mom.
And you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have a younger sister. Her name is Angela. We live in Lyons. And my younger brother, he's 8 years old, Aaron.
Okay. You a good big brother?
Yes, I'm the big brother. I'm the man of the house.
Right, but are you a good big brother?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just checking. Well, what are you doing for fun, dude? Yeah, it seems like you're working nonstop.
Yeah, I mean, for fun, I'm part of like a variety of sports and clubs, you know, from soccer, high school, volleyball, basketball, track.
When was the last time you slept?
I actually got like 3 hours of sleep last night.
All right, you got to sleep more.
You need more than that.
You got to sleep. You got to take care of yourself because your family needs you. The world needs you.
Yep.
And I'm proud of you guys at your school because not a lot of rich folks walk in your hallways. These are hardworking families and lower income families, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, we are predominantly a Latino student body overcoming obstacles, you know, to achieve great things. 90% of us are Latino and 90% are low income. Yet our generation and attendance rates are increasing. And our graduates are entering some of the nation's best schools. For example, I mean, 5 of the 8 Ivy League schools have Morton grads attending this year.
How about that? Good for everybody at Morton. Juan's a senior, 3.9 GPA?
Yes.
In the freshman mentoring program, I know you're an executive of that as well. By the way, you mentioned soccer. What position do you play?
I play both midfield and defender.
So you goal scorer when you're playing midfield?
Yes. Basically, like my role is to...
Clear!
Clear. No, I mean, whatever the team needs, I'm willing to do.
You're a good man. I'm proud to know you. And I appreciate you being on the show, and I'm happy to make you Kid of the Week, soon to be Man of the Week. And what's your mom doing this morning?
She's on her way to work right now.
What'd she do?
She's a receptionist downtown.
She listened to us? She listening now?
I hope so.
Yeah? What's your mom's name?
Feliciana.
Feliciana, you got a beautiful young man here. You got a great son, and I bet your other kids are great, too. You're a great mom. So if she didn't hear that, you'll plan for her. Because I believe that to be true. Doesn't just happen, Juan. You got to have a great mom to help you turn out the way you've turned out.
Thank you. Thank you.
I have tickets for you for the Volvo Auto Museum. You guys can go as a family and see their 400 vintage cars and all sorts of cool stuff. VoloCars.com. An app gift card for you. Get some new headphones or whatever you want to get there at apt from ABT.com. You like pizza?
Yes.
Yeah, why not? Lou Malnati's Pizza.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I have actually one more thing to say. Oh,
hold on, dude. LouMalnati's.com. All right. I had to get the plugs in. You know how show business works, Juan. Come on, man. Yes, what's one other thing you wanted to say?
Well, actually, I was going to say that as a member of the Morton soccer team, we currently are 14 wins, 0 losses, and 1 tie.
Nice.
And ranked number 1 in the nation.
How about that?
By Max Preps. We just won the Pepsi Showdown last Sunday at IT.
How about that? Well, you buried the lead, dude. I didn't know you were that good.
Yeah. No, not really.
Dave, you better be covering that now. Come on.
Yeah, Dave, you need to be going out there right now.
Juan, we'll make sure we get that.
And Juan, we're going to throw this in because all our winners gets this, and your mom can have this. ChevyDriveChicago.com, WGN Radio, stainless steel travel mug, and a bag of Papa Nicholas coffee, courtesy of your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. If you're downtown ever before 10 a.m., and I don't know why you would be now that school started, but if you are, come by and see us.
Okay, thank you.
Keep up the good work, Juan. You're very impressive.
Thank you, thank you.
All right, man, hold on. Juan Valdez. No, not that one. The other one. The more famous one. The one from here.
This one probably works a lot harder.
I bet he does.
Yeah.
Kid sounds like he's going nonstop.
Man.
It's a lot of pressure when you're 17, though.
Oh, yeah. And he sounds like he's the man of the house, too. You know,
yeah,
taking care of his brother's
man of the house. Yeah.
Mom, great.
But
kid.
His mom's got to be something else, you know.
And I'm sure she's crying right now.
Well, then focus on your driving, yes. Mom. But but his mom does have to be something. I mean, that doesn't just happen.
No,
you know what I mean?
Absolutely not.
But that's a young man I'd like to meet and shake his hand.
And you took all those AP classes too?
I did.
Didn't you, Steve?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Well, there were a couple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
nine.
Ended up here. Again, sponsored by Ray and Raymond Chevrolet.
We have no leadership. And honestly, that starts with Secretary Clinton.
All right, you have 2 minutes on the same question to defend tax increases on the wealthiest Americans, Secretary Clinton.
I have a feeling that by the end of this evening, I'm going to be blamed for everything that's ever happened.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah, why not?
Trump, good start. Ooh, bad finish. In case you decided to check out early, maybe you left like 45 minutes in the debate and you go, well, this may be closer than ever. Trump's going to pull away in the polls in the morning. Not so fast. Donald Trump started to have the wheels come off with the whole birther question. And again, it's such an easy answer. The whole birther, you can't go to African-American churches and you can't claim outreach to the black voters in this country and not acknowledge the fact that they may be offended by the fact that you were president of the Birth Earth Society. Oh, but Trump never says he's sorry. Listen.
Nobody was caring much about it. I figured you'd ask the question tonight, of course, but nobody was caring much about it. But I was the one that got him to produce the birth certificate, and I think I did a good job. Just tell you, when you talk about healing, I think that I've developed very, very good relationships over the last little while with the African-American community. I think you can see that. And I feel that they really wanted me to come to that conclusion. And I think I did a great job and a great service, not only for the country, but even for the president in getting him to produce his birth certificate.
Secretary Clinton.
I love the fact that he thinks he has a good relationship with the African-American community. Because he went to church with a few of them, you know. It's the larger equivalent of going, I'm not a racist. I got black friends. He just doesn't get it. Just does not get it. Didn't help himself either on the whole issue of women. his respect for women, or his lack of respect.
I also have a much better temperament than she has. You know, I have a much better. She spent, let me tell you, she spent hundreds of millions of dollars on an advertising. You know, they get Madison Avenue into a room, they put names. Oh, temperament, let's go after. I think my strongest asset, maybe by far, is my temperament. I have a winning temperament. I know how to win. She does not have
Secretary
how to win.
Clinton.
Wait, the AFL-CIO the other day, behind the blue screen, I don't know who you were talking to, Secretary Clinton, but you were totally out of control. I said, there's a person with a temperament that's got a problem.
Secretary Clinton.
Woo, okay.
See, the whole notion that a woman who is upset is totally out of control, it just doesn't help. Oh, and he amped up the whole sexist thing. Listen.
This is a man who has called women pigs, slobs, and dogs, and someone who has said pregnancy is an inconvenience to employers, who has said women don't deserve equal pay unless they do as good a job as men. And one of the worst things he said was about a woman in a beauty contest. He loves beauty contests, supporting them and hanging around them. And he called this woman Miss Piggy. Then he called her Miss Housekeeping because she was Latina. Donald, she has a name.
Where did you find
her? Name
where
is Alicia Machado.
Where did you find her?
And she has become a U.S. citizen, and you can bet she's going to vote this November.
Okay.
Yeah, and by the way, where did you find it? I've seen the video. It's all over. It's the Miss USA contestant in the 90s working out where Creepy Don standing next to her, and he calls her Miss Piggy and Miss Housekeeping. Come on, you can't make it up. But still, as the plane was going down and all the indicators are going off, pull up, pull up, pull up. He had a chance. He had a chance to do the right thing. Did he?
Anything that you wish you did differently?
No, I'm very happy that I was able to hold back on the on the indiscretions with respect to Bill Clinton, because I have a lot of respect for Chelsea Clinton, and I just didn't want to say what I was going to say. And
which is?
Which is, I'll tell you maybe at the next debate. We'll see.
Because Chelsea won't be there? So you respect her last night, but you can't respect her going forward? Is that the message? Oh, what color is the sky in your world? It's a minute before 7. Pat Brady joins us next hour on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Secretary Clinton, yes, is that okay? Good. I want you to be very happy. She doesn't have the look. She doesn't have the stamina.
As soon as he travels to 112 countries and negotiates a peace deal, a ceasefire, he can talk to me about stamina.
NAFTA is the worst trade deal maybe ever signed anywhere, but certainly ever signed in this country. And now you want to approve Trans-Pacific Partnership.
First, we have to build an economy that works for everyone, not just those at the top.
Under my plan, I'll be reducing taxes tremendously. It's going to be a beautiful thing to watch.
The kind of plan that Donald has put forth would be trickle-down economics all over again. I call it trumped-up trickle-down. He has really started his political activity based on this racist lie that our first black president was not an American citizen.
I think I did a good job.
Donald supported the invasion of Iraq.
Wrong.
That is absolutely
wrong.
Proved over and over again.
Wrong.
He actually had, or maybe he doesn't want the American people, all of you watching tonight, to know that he's paid nothing in federal taxes, because there's something he's hiding.
Makes you proud to be an American, doesn't it? Our democracy is strong. Our cable system works. And last night, Donald Trump, he had her. He had her in the first few minutes on a number of things. And then bad Donald slipped in. Or I like to call him Real Donald. What's the thing with the hard ends with him? China! You know what I mean?
Stamina.
Yeah. Stamina! Minor point, just bugs me. Rick Pearson joins us now. Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good morning.
How do you feel about China?
Well, you know, I saw it two tweets that I thought summed up everything. One, and I can't remember who the first one was, but said Donald Trump's motto ought to be, let's make America great again. I own property there.
Not mine, but I like it.
And Stephen King, the horror author, morning tweeted out that one candidate was prepared for a debate. The other candidate was prepared to appear on Sean Hannity's show.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, that's another clueless reference. The fact that he kept bringing up Hannity with the notion that Hannity is somehow a nationally recognized journalistic source that everybody goes to. It's more of the cluelessness.
Right.
What'd you say, Pat?
No, Trump won the Alabama primary last night. Hands down. He will kill her in Alabama.
Well, Rick, I'm telling you, I don't believe she won it outright as much as he lost it outright.
Well, damn tired.
I agree with you about how I thought he started out okay. But, yeah, as the debate went on, it was obvious that she was getting under his skin. And like you said, we started seeing the true Donald and the interruptive Donald, the dismissive Donald. I gave him credit for not coming out of the blocks and referring to her as Secretary Clinton instead of crooked, lying Hillary.
Yeah, and he wanted credit for not bringing up the infidelities of Bill Clinton. You don't get credit for not being a jackass. I don't know what world he's living in.
Well, you don't get credit for omission too. And you know, we barely touched the issue of the Clinton emails that came up and went away. Benghazi didn't come up.
Deplorables didn't come up, and deplorables was one of her worst moments.
Correct. And someone else noted this. You know, what we kind of saw was a low energy Donald last night too. And while, you know, again, I make the point about him interrupting her and being dismissive to her, and how basically he tries to come off, as he always does, as the smartest guy in the room, and trust me, but he talks about problems. She talked about solutions.
It's always nice to hear somebody from Park Avenue talking about the Chicago gang problem, too.
Well, the two of them.
It's the Hamptons of Park Avenue telling us what's wrong in Chicago.
Yeah, and by the way, she grew up here, and he's got a building here. Okay.
She grew up in Park Ridge. It's not exactly Inglewood.
No, but neither, you know, but you and I don't live in Inglewood either. It doesn't mean we can't talk about it if you actually do the homework.
Well, but actually not talk about it and have your facts wrong and not really have any idea what's going on.
As soon as they started talking about Chicago, I was going, just please shut up. Just shut up. And they didn't. What did you think was his best moment, Rick? Anything jump out?
Two things. One, I thought early on when he talked about the issue of experience and NATO, you know, and you've been around 25, 30 years, that kind of reinforcing that issue of, you know, you're the status quo politician and I'm the outsider. And NATO, I think, actually is a very good argument for the core constituency that he's trying to get to, those people who are affected by unemployment, or underemployment because of globalization. I think, you know, those were two good moments that he had.
I thought her best moment of the night, because it answered the question about her health and her experience, was when she answered his stamina insult with, when you've done 120 countries and sat in Congress for 11 hours, then you can talk to me about stamina.
But he didn't answer the question, because the original question was, you said that she doesn't look like a president.
Right.
What does that mean?
Right.
And of course, he tried to shift quickly into the stamina health issue.
The next debate is the vice presidential debate. I would make the argument that it is vitally important because these two are both, 70 and 68. He's eating KFC on the plane. She just got off of pneumonia. There's no guarantee they're around in 4 years. So are we going to be shifting our interest there, or is it still all going to be about these two?
I think it's still going to be about these two, but it will be interesting to see, in the case of Mike Pence being Trump's running mate, so seeing if there's some kind of distance that Pence tries to draw between some of the more outlandish positions that Donald Trump has taken. You're dealing with both with Pence And with Kane, you're dealing with, you know, two experienced politicians, two guys familiar with Congress. I think the tenor of the debate will be different. But I that's the key I would look for, is to see where Pence actually may differ with his presidential running mate.
What are you writing about today?
Well, today, obviously, some of the follow-up from the debate, including the whole issue of, you know, what Donald Trump said about Chicago.
It's Rick Pearson, finest political writer in America. He's, of course, host of the Sunday Spin, which I assume you'll be on next Sunday.
Absolutely. And, of course, we'll be talking a lot about this.
All right, but thank you. And at Rap30 on Twitter and social media. Jason DeSanto teaches people how to debate, breaks down debate, understands speech, speaks English. It's my second language. You'll be here in a second as well with Pat Brady. We'll continue to talk about this on 720 WGN. And Eric Edelstein will join us in just a second as well. He is currently in North Carolina. Apparently, he doesn't know there's no border guards.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I will release my tax returns against my lawyer's wishes when she releases her 33,000 emails that have been deleted. As soon as she releases them, I will release my tax returns. And that's against my lawyers. They say, don't do it. I will tell you this. No, in fact, watching shows, reading the papers, almost every lawyer says, you don't release your returns until the audit's complete. When the audit's complete, I'll do it. But I would go against them if she releases her
emails. So it's negotiable?
It's not negotiable, no.
Got to a point last night where, you know, when you're driving on a winter road and the car starts to fishtail, that felt like Trump's answers. Uh-oh, we're going to spin! Jason DeSantos here, senior lecturer from Northwestern University, which means he won't talk to anyone who's not a senior. And nice to see you. How are you?
Hi, Steve. Great to see you, too.
What did you think?
The Thrilla in Hofstra.
She did do a little rope-a-dope. She did do a little sit back and let him make a fool out of himself.
That was the most masterful part of her performance, actually.
What she didn't say.
What she didn't say. Her cutaways. I've always thought Al Gore lost the presidency because of his facial expressions in his debate.
Remember,
with
this is
W.
my
Bush.
Al Gore impression.
That was the lockbox, right?
The lockbox. But then
the size.
And yeah. I think she may have won it last night with hers. She needed to connect with people, and she did it a little bit with the substance of her answers, talking more about the people who've been stiffed by Trump, and a lot of them are workers, and talking about her father, and really speaking to middle-class economic anxiety. But I thought the heavy-duty work she did in connecting was simply in letting him hang himself while she looked on bemusedly.
Yeah, well, that was the deal, right? Her face kind of told the story that everybody was feeling. And the thing is, in the first half, when her answers were too long and too Hillary, he could have let her continue to drone on, but he was so in his own head, once we hit the 45-minute mark, he got into tired, cranky Donnie, and he lost it.
Well, it's true, but he was driving his message for the first 25 minutes of the debate.
And her responses were too long.
Outsider, economy, trade.
You know, I would never disagree with someone from Northwestern. I was going to go there.
Did you know he's
I couldn't get in.
Listen, before you say this, he's a senior lecturer.
Yeah, I didn't get that.
Okay, Pat, come at me.
The connecting thing, I understand what you're saying, because she was talking about middle class issues and job issues and things that are important. But she needs to connect with some Republicans and people that are undecided. And I'm not sure if she got that across the line. I agree with everything you said about Trump blowing it and her performance being very good. But who is she trying to connect? If she wants to connect with her base, she's already there. But I don't think she's going to sway any Republicans.
No. We're talking about Rust Belt voters, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Michigan.
Oh, I think she moved the needle on some moderates.
I don't think those folks.
If there are some people last night that are waiting, were waiting to decide and weren't connected until last night, and I shouldn't say she moved the needle. The experience moved the needle because he crashed and burned.
That's my point. I'm not sure if she moved the needle. I think it was more.
Well, I think she'll take the win. Eric Edelstein, live from North Carolina. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning.
What did you think? And by the way, I'm assuming you watched.
Wait, was that last night?
No, yeah.
I did. You know, I agree with what the guys are saying. I had this image, guys, as the debate wore down, my mind went to what the Saturday Night Live skit would be, and I kept seeing cutbacks to the guy whoever's playing Trump being more and more disheveled, hair more and more out of place,
sweating, tie loose. I mean, he just kind of came unraveled there in that last half hour.
I thought he was going to bite the water
glass. He turned into the Hulk. He did. He turned into the Hulk.
It was a spectacle. I mean, obviously I'm a partisan, and I think you can critique what Hillary did. But I think fundamentally, and you know, Jason can attest to this, you had one candidate who had a plan and followed it, and then the other one who was led around by the nose, took every bait that was dangled in front of him, and, you know, just basically impaled himself.
And well, you and Pat can speak to this. Ego of politicians has to be one of the most dangerous things you could deal with, because you only have to go back to 2012 to see how dangerous ego is when the president didn't think it was important to prepare against Mitt Romney and slept through the first debate and almost cost him the election. Trump's ego apparently so big, he continues to not listen to his own people, and he wasn't ready last night. And I refuse to buy into this notion that his ADD is so severe he can't focus enough to prep. He's just not doing the work.
You know, we talk about this a lot with candidates when, you know, we were practicing and working on questions and working on media training. And, you know, a lot of times people get frustrated and they say, you know, why do I have to do this? And you remind them, the people who are the best at anything, whether you're playing the violin or you're giving speeches or you're a dentist or you're a radio host, you practice. And the fact of the matter is that that's an audition to be president of the United States. And I thought Hillary had a great line. It might have seemed prophecy, but the notion that you prepare to be president of the United States, and I think it's pretty clear this guy, I think David Brooks or someone wrote a few months ago that most Americans spend more time preparing to buy a sofa than this guy would to be president of the United States.
The question of what happens from here is a real one, and I am reluctant to dismiss Trump because he's Glenn Close from Fatal Attraction. Every time you think that she drowned in the tub, she sits up with a knife again. So are you ready to write him off, or do we need to wait?
Someone had a great comment. They said, here's the 2016 election. Clinton stomps Trump in first debate. Trump gets a bounce. So, you know, who the hell knows what's going to happen?
Who the hell knows?
Which Trump would say. But look, he still has, you know, despite all the, I think, kind of hyperventilating over some of these national polls, he's got a fundamental math problem in these battleground states. The map is very, very tough for him. And, you know, at this point, these are tactical nights, huge tactical nights. And I don't, while Pat's probably right, I'm not sure Hillary necessarily moved the needle with a ton of folks. I think she was presidential, and I don't think Trump did anything to change the trajectory of the race. In fact, I think he might have gone backwards.
Are you in Charlotte?
I am in Raleigh.
You're in Raleigh, okay. Are you coming back, or you did you move?
No. I'll be back tonight. You going to pick me up at the airport, guys?
I will be in Raleigh later today, as a matter of fact. Maybe I'll see you. All right, hold the line, if you would, please. That's the great Eric Edelstein. And just quickly from YouTube before we jump to the big story, over or not over?
Not over.
But close, sir.
No, you said it was like Glenn Close, right?
Yeah.
In that movie.
Fatal Attraction.
Yeah, Fatal Attraction. Who's the bunny? The American people are the bunny.
They've boiled us. And over or not over?
Not over, but he took, a small or maybe big step backwards because he failed the commander-in-chief test. And his high watermark, we talked about it before the debate last night, that the high watermark for him might have been 30 seconds before this debate started, because there were some good polls, but I'm not sure what he did to help himself, and probably a little bit backwards.
Big story next, and more from these guys on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
You take a look at her website. She's going to raise taxes $1.3 trillion.
Mr. Trump,
look at her website. You know what? It's no different than this. She's telling us how to fight ISIS. Just go to her website. She tells you how to fight ISIS on her website. I don't think General Douglas MacArthur would like that
too much. The next segment, we're continuing
well,
the subject
of. Well, at least I have a plan to fight ISIS.
Prosperity.
No, you're telling the enemy everything you want to do.
No, we're not.
See, you're telling the enemy everything you want to do. No wonder you've been fighting. No wonder you've been fighting ISIS your entire adult life.
Okay, a couple of points. ISIS started, like if there was a founded in sign outside of ISIS headquarters, you're looking at what, 2005, 2006? You know, they franchised after that, but I certainly wouldn't say it's Hillary's entire adult life. And is there anything that ages a girl faster than referencing General Douglas MacArthur over and over again? Donald Trump, Pat Brady, if you are managing his campaign, what are you saying to the public and what are you saying behind closed doors?
I think...
if you're Kellyanne Conway, and by the way, you'd look great in that dress, what would you say?
She's done a fine job. I'd put her out more, but I think it's too far along for him to really change what he's doing. He needs to keep what he's doing and just try to convince that 7 or 8% he needs. But he's really, right now, is kind of boxed in. And last night, like I was joking before, he can win the Alabama primary. But the thing that would be most disturbing to me if I were on the Trump campaign, which obviously I'm not, is his whole premise has been, this is a different kind of campaign. I'm an outsider. I'm going to do big rallies. I'm not going to do a ground game. I'm not going to do TV. I'm not going to raise a ton of money. I'm going to win. Well, and part of that is I'm not going to prepare for a debate. Well, it doesn't work out too well.
But they're on the verge, Jason DeSanto, of spending $100 million, or at least that's what they're saying they're going to do.
Which is nothing compared to what she's spending.
No, but if you've got $100 million you're about to roll out, and based on what happened last night, maybe you don't put those commercials out.
Who, Donald?
Yeah, because those commercials you're about to put out don't really, you know, deal with the fact that you just blew up your campaign last night to some extent.
He hasn't done anything, and I think the big mistake he made last night, he's not done anything to appeal to people he needs to win. There's only 20% undecided right now. And women, millennials, suburban women, educated white folks that aren't voting for him that he needs, and he's not going to get with that performance.
Let me grab Aaron Kotursky here real quick, then jump in with Jason DeSanto. Aaron Kotursky, ABC News, was at Hofstra last night. What was the mood in the room?
Well, I think it was there's a good deal of excitement. The people were really anticipating this debate, and I think if you were a partisan or a supporter of either candidate, you came away fairly happy and frustrated both, because Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump each had their moments. They each took their licks, but they it was not boring by any means, and the two of them. Maybe reinforced perceptions of the other rather than, you know, doing anything to sway voters to their side. For Donald Trump, he tried to cast Hillary Clinton as a thing of the past, the same old kind of politician. Hillary Clinton sought to portray Donald Trump as unfit and unpresidential. And I think he may have had the better first half. She may have had the better second half.
But Aaron, doesn't he have to move the needle, though?
They both do. The race is essentially tied. And so I think, sure, they both are trying to, as you say, move the needle and sway the undecided and those on the fence, or maybe even get a few from the other camp. But I'm not sure last night did it. But they have two more chances to try and prove they have the winning argument.
But the TV sense of this, and again, this goes back to all the way back to Nixon and Kennedy. The TV sense of this is the wheels came off for him at 45 minutes. Was there a feel of that in the room, or was it not quite as obvious if you were there?
I'm not sure it was terribly obvious. I mean, by the sheer force of personality, he was the dominant figure of the first half of the debate, and he was able to, I think, fairly skillfully interject, talk over, sigh, and interrupt when in little moments that may have put her, you know, kind of off guard. And she clearly was spoiling for a fight. She didn't shrink from Donald Trump, but he's so, you know, ferocious that, you know, he did seem to overtake her at times. And yet, in doing so, he went over some rather well-trod fibs. He you know, going through birthers and comments about women and almost bragging that he didn't pay taxes because his tax money would have been squandered. I mean, I'm not sure how well that wears with voters who don't trust him to begin with.
Do you think this could have been a case? We're watching it on TV on a split screen, so Trump's face is on the whole time. And even when he's getting those digs, the goofy faces he's making, to me, really mitigated what he was trying to do. Maybe were you getting a split screen, or were you just watching it in the room live?
Yeah, it's hard to know how a television audience gets it. I also try to listen for the radio audience, and I think, you know, you heard him because he was able to interject, or you could hear the audible sighs or the nope, not true, nope, meh, you know, and some of that she let go unchecked. It does give you the impression just to the ear that he was the more dominant figure. And yet, you know, by the end, she seemed to have him on the ropes a couple of times. And, you know, the couple of falsehoods that he repeated, and you know, that may not have been terribly terribly well done.
All right, we'll let you roll, Aaron. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Aaron Kotursky, ABC News. Jason DeSantos here. It's interesting because you do go back to Kennedy, Nixon. Nixon won the radio debate. Kennedy won the TV debate.
It was the anniversary last night, too.
Yeah, how about that? The vast majority of people saw it. They didn't hear it. But certainly for those who are listening, I hadn't thought about that from Aaron Kotursky's standpoint. But that does make sense that Trump would not be as offensive to those who were hearing it. He probably came up better and stronger.
Well, and to Pat's point about the split screen, and I go back to what I said earlier, I don't think it was the way Trump looked, except for right at the beginning where I thought he looked odd, like he wasn't, maybe he was just socializing himself to the situation. But after that, he looked like Trump. And if you've seen Trump on TV a lot, he sort of, there was nothing that was particularly disarming about what he was doing. But the split screen with Clinton's reactions to him, to me, was the devastating part of it. And I'm thinking again about particular voter groups. She needed to connect. She needed to be warmer. She needed to be a little bit more likable in that way. And she did that while exposing him as being temperamentally unfit. And that is the key for voters that Pat just referenced, suburbanites, white college-educated voters in particular, that he is losing, that Mitt Romney won by 14 points and no Republican has lost in 60 years. He needed to expose her as being part of a rigged game while reassuring people that he was fit for the job. And if you ask yourself, did he reassure anybody that he was fit for the job? In the first 40 minutes, where he was essentially himself, but hit key issues like trade and like the economy, he did that. After the 45-minute mark, he got hit on taxes. He got hit on birtherism. He got hit with Clinton's comment about being prepared for president is a good thing, at which point he said the following. I have these notes, Steve. Cyber is tough. My son is amazing. Admirals kind of like me. That's my summary of five minutes of the argument. And then he started name-checking Sean Hannity. So if you were looking for reassurance, you kind of didn't get it in the second half of the debate, is only my point.
The notes are more frightening than what I saw. Pat Brady is here. So let me ask both of you. Did Hillary Clinton miss a moment last night when Trump said about his taxes? He admitted he didn't pay taxes, and he said, that makes me smart. Did she miss a moment by not stopping down and saying, are you saying on the record you didn't pay your taxes?
I think huge miss.
Because it's as good as revealing his taxes. It's as good as letting him out.
But she followed up strongly with what that means, and I think was very effective, but I think she could have really pinned his ears back with it.
I think Pat's right. She did a good job coming back around by saying, so that's $0 for schools, zero for vets, zero for troops. That made it more real. But yeah, I mean, in the moment, it probably would have been good to nail him down on that point. Yeah.
It cost him on the man of the people stuff, too, when he said, because I'm smart, so the rest of us are dumb that pay federal. Maybe we are, but when he said that, that's not the Make America Great crowd.
One of our texters just pointed out, too, Trump says NATO doesn't pay up, and yet he said he didn't pay his taxes. That's the whole double standard world he lives in.
Yeah, and he lives in it very comfortably. And
he'll
part
say
of
that's business.
Well, yeah, but that's part of the burden on a debater that I think Clinton handled well last night. You've got plenty of material over the past 18 months and many, many years before that about inconsistencies, about insults, about statements that make America more dangerous to our foes. And you have to just parse through those and be ready to point them out. And she did a good job of doing
and
that.
And that did not happen in the primaries where the bankruptcies, where she brought up the six bankruptcies, got somewhat specific, his nonsense argument about they're not personal. And she did that on several issues very effectively that they did not do in the primary. They just let it go. And I think that's why he never got frustrated, except the second debate in the primary, but got really frustrated when you point out that basically there's a lot of fraud in some of the stuff he says. Yeah. She was very good with that.
Yeah, the personal failures light him up like a Christmas tree. Can you guys hang for one more second?
Yes. Yeah.
If you can't, I'm sorry. You're hanging anyway.
I got Eric and
Lock
Kathy.
The doors. Eric and Kathy.
Eric and Kathy are giving away Miami Sound Machine tickets.
Oh, you got to get over there then. Stand by for that. Not the Eric and Kathy tickets, but for more of this.
The Steve Cochran Show.
The argument is that it's a form of racial profiling.
No, the argument is that we have to take the guns away from these people that have them and that are bad people that shouldn't have them. These are felons. These are people that are bad people. When you have 3,000 shootings in Chicago from January 1st, when you have 4,000 people killed in Chicago by guns from the beginning of the presidency of Barack Obama, his hometown, You have to have stop and frisk.
Your 2 minutes has expired, but I do want to follow up. Stop and frisk was ruled unconstitutional in New York because it largely singled out black and Hispanic young men.
No, you're wrong.
No, Donald, you're wrong. More on stop and frisk in Chicago in a second. First, 630 texter, what's the difference between Donald Trump and a puppy? A puppy will eventually stop whining and peeing on the floor. 815, am I the only one frustrated by Clinton's reactions while Trump was speaking? She had a stupid grin on her face the whole time and didn't appear to be as serious as I would hope she would be. Even when they were talking about her deleted emails, she laughed and smiled. And then 630, what's happened to our wonderful country? How did such a ungrateful person become the Republican presidential candidate? Person who's never had to work paycheck to make ends meet. I'm in that group and glad to be there. Just a couple of things from you guys. Text or line 312-981-7200. Pat Brady's here. Pat, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies.
And Jason DeSanto, you employed?
More or less, yeah. I'm
a senior lecturer.
Northwestern Pritzker University School of Law.
Yes, sir. The stop and frisk. Lester isn't wrong. There was direct profiling that had gone on with stop and frisk. It certainly had an impact on crime early, but it was ruled unconstitutional. I don't think we're going to be going to stop and frisk in Chicago.
That may be true. When I heard that exchange, though it was fact-free, I nonetheless felt like on that issue he had more or less fought to a draw, staying with a message of law and order.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought Clinton missed an opportunity at that point to pivot to the question of birtherism. That was the much larger and better point for her to make. And then not 3 minutes later, Lester Holt asked about it, and that really began the descent.
Started the fire. But there is a fair argument to be made that, but it's an argument to be made to President Obama. This is your hometown. You are going to be here. Is there something more you could do to stem the tide of violence on the West Side? I mean, that's a fair point to make, but it's not Hillary's problem at this point.
No, and I also suspect that for some people that claim has some resonance. But the larger question here was, who seems like they would deal with the question like an adult? I thought her answer was fine. I didn't think it was particularly great. I thought the much better ground for her to be on was shaming him on the question of birtherism. And what I thought she did well last night was picking the tone to use at various points with him. Humor, shame, moderated outrage. There's all kinds of ways you can, and ignoring him. And there's different levels.
If you turn the sound down, to me, it felt like, and everybody's been in this position, maybe it's a family reunion, maybe it's a dinner, where there's an older couple, and he answers all the questions, and he talks over her, and he's obnoxious, and she sort of smiles and is uncomfortable, and you always feel for her. So just based on texture, I think there's some points she won last night that cut through.
I didn't think she looked uncomfortable, though. I think at a certain point she looked like this might end up being kind of fun. And
Clinton, I'm going to have to talk to you about your definition of fun.
Yeah, and I have 500 tons of opposition research that I'm about to dump on your head.
Right,
I'll give you a different perspective. I think that she needs to win the 20% that's in the middle that is undecided on either of these two. And there are a lot of people that look at Hillary Clinton, who is lecturing us in the city of Chicago on the crime problem. This is a woman who's lived in the bubble for the last 40 years, hasn't driven a car in 25 years. And when she gives that lectury tone to certain people, it's very grating and very irritating. And the point in politics, and I think where she failed last night, even though she kept a smile on her face, plastered on her face, and I think very much outsmarted Donald Trump, the likability factor with her is just not there for a lot of people. And that's what I think that she needed to do more of. I will give her credit, though, on the email thing for saying, I made a mistake and sticking with it. And I think that...
And he still is like a Joe DiMaggio streak of not apologizing. He still doesn't apologize for anything.
Yeah, but she still... She smiled, and I think there are some people, including me, that take the view the smile looks a little plastered, and the whole kind of rolling your eyes. Well, that's why a lot of people don't like the know-it-all telling me what to do. That's why she's not likable. And the thing she's missing... Again, I think she outsmarted him last night is the likability factor.
Well, okay, there's one other voter group that also is at play. I don't think it was plastered on. I mean, that wasn't my...
I'm just telling you what some other
people
think.
No, and I get that. Because I've seen when it does look like that to me.
She didn't do the laugh thing.
No.
Fortunately.
But we have progressives groups like people who are thinking about voting for Gary Johnson, for example, people who liked Bernie. That's another pool of voters she has to appeal to and get them to see that it's a binary choice, that they cannot do anything to put Trump into the White House. And to the extent that she can expose him, make him look sillier, eviscerate him, I think that helps her with those voters. And so we might be thinking,
I agree, though, but if you're talking this late in the game that that's who you need to get behind you, there might be bigger problems.
But there will be some retrenchment by those people. They're not, I mean, not all of the 13.
Well, those are mostly young people.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And those are the people that I think that performance would have spoken.
But don't, well, the people that are, the people, the millennials that are Gary Johnson, William Weld's, will they come over to Hillary or will they not vote? In other words, if it gets down to November 8th and it looks like Gary Johnson, William Weld are not even a factor, Jill Stein's not a factor, will they choose not to vote?
She has to close the deal with them. She did not do that in one key way last night. She's a great tactical debater. Her individual issue answers are really good. They always have been. Where she struggles is to take those answers and funnel them up into one common story about her vote.
And this is what we were talking about this yesterday. She's the least aspirational candidate I've ever seen.
And if you're 18 years old, you want to, or 21 years old, you want to be aspirational. Right.
That shining city on the hill.
You want to feel like I got a future.
Yeah.
Or at the least show why voting for you continues social progress.
Right.
Unity.
Yeah, but they're not supporting her right now because they don't believe the last 8 years have supported social progress. And I'm not dinging the president on that.
Oh, I think you're giving 21-year-olds far too much credit.
Well,
I don't think they're
whatever,
thinking
but
that far.
Well, I mean, is she going to go as far as, say, free college? I mean, that's not realistic, and she can't say that and be seriously considered as a presidential candidate. But where's the inspiration and her candidacy? That's what I've always wondered, why they haven't come up with a better theme other than the era with the light blue airplane.
I like airplanes.
I do, too, but it's just there's this doesn't fire you up.
We couldn't go and wrap this up with at least one text or comment on wardrobe. For 847, I hate to say it, but Hillary won the debate, and I did not support her, but I may now. I even took 50 points away from her for dressing in Star Trek cosplay. She still won.
I think
I thought she looked lovely, and I thought he looked lovely.
Hey, can I ask Jason a question?
You got 30 seconds.
What about the podium? I thought she was at a disadvantage with the podium.
They adjusted the podium. They give her
it
one.
It still looked like it didn't fit. Was it good?
I thought the microphone was a little high
yeah,
on her.
Okay.
But the main thing in terms of the dynamics was 90-minute debate. There's an old adage that 60 minutes is the witching hour. That's when most mistakes occur in a debate, and that's really when he started to go downhill. For the town hall debate, totally new dynamic again for him. How do you deal in space with another candidate, and particularly a female candidate? So just when maybe he'll get up to speed with the idea of being in a debate, he better practice working in a town hall format.
Are they all 90 minutes?
Yes.
Okay. Nice to see you both.
Good to see
Everybody
you,
Loves Raymond came on at 9. So
you flipped
that was
over?
Six you flipped
six over?
Minutes,
yeah. Okay. Pat Brady, Next Generation Strategies, and if you're a freshman, a sophomore, or a junior, hopefully at some point Professor DeSanto will talk to you. But right now he's a senior lecturer.
God, you love that.
I kind of do.
Oh, man.
Good to see you, buddy.
It's good to see you, too.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 972.
Dean joins us from the road now. Another texter last night, Dean, on the debate. 708. Yep. These clowns last night made me want to vote for Nixon.
I got to say, there were some pretty entertaining social media going on during and after the debate last night. It just makes me scared for America.
Why are you on the street today?
You know, that's my other job. I like to work the streets.
Yeah, of
like
course you do.
Out here.
Yeah.
I like to be out with the people, one-on-one with the people.
Right, of course.
And, man, oh, man, there are some people down here at the Private Bank Theater on Monroe Street. Steve, I don't know if you've heard, Hamilton is coming to town. The preview performances are actually going to begin tonight, the official opening for the show. Is October the 19th, but, you know, with preview performances, they're still kind of working out. I mean, the show is the show, but they're, you know, working out things, tweaking things, changing things. But still, the very first performance is going to be tonight. Also, the second block of tickets for the show
going on sale this morning at 10 o'clock. And people have been in line outside of the Private Bank Theater since yesterday afternoon. Some
really?
People got here like yesterday morning, and they've been camped out here on Monroe Street, slept out here all night long, and they want to be first in line to get tickets for the show. Now, there are people who seem to be ticket resellers that are in line. There's a pretty substantial line of those. I'm told that some people are paid $100 to sit in line, because each person, when you make a purchase, you can buy six tickets. Somebody, according to a source out here, tells me that they get $100, they stand in line, they buy their six tickets and hand them off to somebody who is going to sell them for considerably more than that. But the majority of this line are real musical theater fans, huge Hamilton fans, people who are obsessed with this show, with the soundtrack, with the diversity of the show, with everything that has made this the hottest show on Broadway. So this morning at 10, they're going to open up the box offices, and people here will be able to buy tickets at 10 o'clock. You'll be able to also purchase at BroadwayInChicago.com. Also at 10 o'clock this morning, they start this same-day lottery. They're going to do the same-day lottery ticket sales every day of the performance for however long the show is here, and it's expected to be years. You go online, you register, and if you're lucky, you can purchase $10 tickets. You know, those are going to be scattered around the theater. So there is a lot going on here in Hamilton Land, here down on Monroe Street.
Anything else in show business that's troubling you this morning?
What else do we have going on here today? You know, the late night comedians are, you know, probably the biggest winner of the debate last night. Stephen Colbert was did his show live last night, so he had, you know, stuff like an hour after the debate ended. He had, you know, full monologue, full show, full everything related to the debate last night that was pretty funny, worth checking out. That's online. There is some video that is online this morning of a couple that were taking wedding pictures and videos in New York Central Park. A jogger comes along who happens to be Oscar winner Tom Hanks. And Tom Hanks, as I've said over and over and over, the nicest guy of all the A-listers that we've ever talked to. He could have easily just, you know, kept going. Nobody recognized him. He stops and congratulates the couple who had just gotten married, stops and takes pictures with them. He's taking videos with them. He told them that he is ordained to perform marriages, as you are.
Right.
And, you know, and
but
you
I wasn't. Know, yeah. I wasn't jogging in that park.
Yeah, I think the odds of Steve jogging in Central Park are, you know, zero to none.
Actually, the odds of me jogging anywhere right now are pretty slim.
That's what I wanted to try to narrow it down just a little bit, if possible. But anyway, Tom Hanks stops, and you know, as always with Tom Hanks. Could not be a nicer guy. They rescheduled the Green Day concert. Green Day was supposed to perform at the Aragon Theater last Wednesday. There was some illness by several members of the band, so they had to cancel that. They announced the rescheduled date. This is going to be October the 23rd. So if you've got tickets, if you had tickets for that original Green Day show that was supposed to be last week, your tickets will be honored for the newly scheduled show as well.
One last thing I had a question about, if you don't mind.
Yeah.
HBO's Liev Schreiber. I say HBO's because he's actually, well, he does Showtime series, but he actually is the voice of HBO Sports, which I constantly hear, and right. Been married to or together with Naomi Watts forever. I assume they're married, and now they're splitting up.
Yeah, actually, they're not legally married, but they have been together for 11 years. And they issued a joint statement yesterday, rather quietly, very kind of unassumedly, that they've decided that the best thing for their family is for them no longer to live together. So as opposed to the Angelina Jolie, Brad Pitt media circus that took place last week, this was just a quiet, simple announcement. Yeah, they've ended their relationship of 11 years.
They're both extremely talented actors.
Yes. Yeah. Both extremely talented. Both Liev Schreiber was in the movie that won the Academy Award for Best Picture about the Boston Herald's
right
story on sex abuse in the Catholic Church. Whose name, isn't this funny? The movie won an Oscar, and I can't even think of the name
of
it.
Can't think of it either, but I can tell you he's also the star of Ray Donovan.
And Ray Donovan, and Naomi Watts has been an Academy Award nominated. Both very nice, and you know, hopefully they find whatever happiness it is that they're looking for their life. Steve, I may bring tomorrow morning when I fill in for you, full show tomorrow. I'm just going to bring in average people from the street here, because it's crazy out here.
Well, bring them in. Invite them in.
Monroe and Dearborn. So tomorrow morning, a mixture of sleazy media people like me, ticket scalpers, and people who have walked up to me and have mistaken me for Tom Skilling.
You know, the one thing I'll just leave you with this, Dean will fill in tomorrow morning on the show, and thank you for that. The one thing that Mary Sandberg, not Mary Vandeville, but Mary Sandberg, Sandberg, producer of the program, loves is last-minute guest changes that she's not aware of. Loves it.
I know. I found that out. I made a couple of changes yesterday myself, which is not really last minute. It's like, you know, 2 days
before. No. Listen, just let her run the show, and you'll be fine.
I just need to sit back and shut up.
No, well, you'll need to talk. That's why it's called a talk show. But thank you again for filling in.
I can't wait to fill in. It's
and the movie's called
fun.
Spotlight. 84 texters just hit us at one time. The movie's called Spotlight that you and I couldn't think of.
Hey, don't get me mad about forgetting, because if there's one thing that is my best quality, Steve, it's my temperament, and we all know that.
That is it. Yeah, I was telling Sandberg, and she said, oh, yeah, that's it. All right, good luck tomorrow, and thanks, buddy. Have fun with your street people.
The Steve Cochran Show.
And they also gave me a defective mic. Did you notice that?
No.
My mic was defective within the room.
So that guy's not getting paid.
No, but I wonder, was that on purpose?
Who knows?
Was that on purpose? But I had a mic that wasn't working properly within the room. But overall, I thought it was a great. And if you look at all of your polls,
yeah,
they're through the roof.
Congratulations.
Donald J. Trump, the sniffler. All over Twitter last night, Trump sniffing or sniffing Trump or sniffing Donald. They all became workable hashtags because Trump appeared to be ill. Is that maybe why he didn't bring up Hillary's recent problem with pneumonia? Because she did not appear to be ill at all. Matter of fact, she appeared to be robot-like, or robot-like, if you prefer. She didn't drink any water. Did anybody see her drink water at all the entire night?
I did not.
No, I didn't either. But she wasn't coughing or anything. No signs of any lingering pneumonia.
Trump had cases and cases of Trump water right there by him.
Yeah, and he was sniffling.
She could have had an IV that we didn't see.
I suppose. Let's go to Dr. Stephen Colbert for an explanation.
You know, for months now, Donald Trump has questioned Hillary's health. Repeatedly. And I gotta say, there was one possible health scare on stage tonight. Trump sounded like he was fighting off a cold with cocaine.
We have to renegotiate our trade deals, unless you're Mexico.
He sounded like the coked up best man in the bathroom at a wedding. No. You guys, I got it. I know we can fix the entire economy. Let's all go in together. Let's buy a boat. Yeah. It'll be great. It'll be great. We're going to start a restaurant. We're going to start a restaurant together. He was like Scarface, but you know, with the more face.
Donald Trump from Stephen Colbert, Dr. Stephen Colbert's perspective. You know who started that last night? It was Howard Dean. Remember Howard Dean?
Was sure.
DNC director, mm-hmm. presidential candidate. Now we're going to Iowa.
Right.
In Ohio. Right. Howard Dean actually tweeted out last night, noticed Trump sniffing, coke user. Isn't Howard Dean a doctor? Like a real doctor?
Is he?
I think he is. A bunch of Twitter action on it last night. Michael Ian Black, comedian. Trump has the sniffles. Is he okay? What's going on with his health? Can he serve? Ryan Houlihan. Trump sniffing and sweating and chugging water. What's he hiding? Neil and tweeted, why does he keep sniffing and losing track of what he's saying? Is he ill? Does he need medicine? David tweets, shout out to Hillary getting pneumonia, then shaking Donald's hand, thus giving him the sniffles instantly. What an incredible strategy by Hillary Clinton. Virginia tweeted, possible Adderall inhales by one of the candidates who sometimes has a focus problem. Seth MacFarlane, you know Seth MacFarlane, family ties. Is Trump sniffing so much because he smells his own BS? And on it goes at 8:48. Started with Dr. Howard Dean.
Not only are we going to New Hampshire, Tom Harkin, we're going to South Carolina and Oklahoma and Arizona and North Dakota and New Mexico. We're going to California and Texas and New York. And we're going to South Dakota and Oregon and Washington and Michigan. And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House. Yeah!
2004, that was enough to end your campaign. Oh, the rules have changed. Let's get off the debate for a second at 8:52. For our listeners in Australia, last night in the middle of the debate, a thunderous boom and a bright flash over the course of northeastern Australia now said to possibly have been a huge meteor falling out of the sky.
Wow.
Police in central Queensland were inundated with phone calls after residents felt the earth shake and saw a bright light trail across the sky. The government's geological survey confirmed that a tremor near the city of Gladstone around 8:30 local time was not an earthquake. Experts have since claimed the event was largely a large meteor strike near the coast. The large, loud boom and bright light suggest an explosion of some kind, and meteor seems to be the answer as far as we know. No reports of debris have yet surfaced. Local time in Australia now, it's got to be nighttime there now, right? Aren't they 16 hours? Is that right?
I believe so. Something like that.
Residents swarmed local social media to describe the mysterious event. Some take it to Facebook and said it looked like it was as big. This is a direct quote from the Australians. It's as big as hell. A big shooting star lit up the whole beach. Then about a minute later, a big bang and a shock wave. Remember that meteor that came down in Russia? And we had that dash cam video of everything because every Russian car has got dash cams on them. Yeah, I don't, you know, look, I don't want that.
No,
I don't want that. I don't need a meteor. Don't want a meteor. You know what I saw as a kid, though? I saw a ball of lightning. A lightning ball. My father used to like to go outside and watch thunderstorms. Like he'd sit outside with a Budweiser and, you know, watch these thunderstorms roll. Sit on an enclosed porch.
Right.
And watch these thunderstorms roll in. Remember the episode of Seinfeld where George ran over the kids trying to get out because a small fire had started in the trash can?
Mm-hmm.
My father nearly ran me over when this ball of lightning hit and created this gigantic boom in the middle of a monsoon, literally started the ground on fire. It's crazy.
Like, how far were you from the site?
100 yards.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'd shake you up.
Yeah, it did. But that wouldn't technically be a meteor. And I asked Tom Skilling about it once, and he said, oh, geez, Steve, you saw, wow, that must have been something. Sandberg, you know about balls of lightning?
I don't know about balls of lightning, but I have a criticism that you mentioned that story. Why does everyone need to take to social media when an event happens? Like, whenever we have a rainbow in the sky here, everyone needs to post a picture of it.
I don't post rainbow pictures.
I find it unnecessary sharing.
There's too much sharing. I'm with you. There's too much sharing that goes on. I don't need pictures of your food.
And because nobody can pick up the phone and say, oh, did you see that rainbow this morning?
Because nobody will talk on the phone.
Why do you need to share that anyway, though? Like, can't you just have seen it and that just be to yourself?
You need to live your life. I've told Ross this. When Ross and Amy were kids, there's all sorts of pictures of Ross and Amy and Maureen, their mom. I'm going, well, it's a shame that their dad died. It's because I was always the videographer. I was always the camera guy. I mean, there's just not that many family pictures because if you're a parent, Dave, you must have gone through this.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a parent in the 90s, oh, you were taking pictures. You were taking pictures of everything, every second. I think what you're saying here, Sandberg, and I agree with you, live your life. Stop sharing it with everyone. Just live your life.
Yeah. I don't need to know if you were in Australia and saw that ball. Oh, well, get over it.
Let me play devil's advocate here. Maybe somebody is just trying to bring a little brightness into your life with a picture of a rainbow. What's wrong with that?
And then you just feel bad because you don't ever have any fun like that. Or, you know, you don't get to travel to Australia or travel to wherever.
So is that
right?
You
feel even worse.
So that's how you take it?
I feel even worse.
So you hear the story about the rainbow Australian picture and you feel bad because you're not there?
Yeah, like Andrea in Greece sending all these gorgeous pictures of her at, you know, wherever she is, the Parthenon, all these places. And I'm like, oh, I want to be there. Thanks, Andrea.
That's why she sent them.
Yeah. It's really fascinating the way your mind works as opposed to ours. I get pictures of Andrea in Greece and I go, oh, yeah, she's in Greece. It's 8:57. Let's take a break, come back, and the Wang Dang Doodle picks are coming up for week 4 next on 720 WGN after the news.
The Steve Cochran Show.
It's Wang Dang Doodle time.
351! Rover, sit! Hut, hut!
I could care less. Wait, I couldn't care less. Whatever.
A storied broadcast career. And now he's reduced to Wang Dang Doodling. The great Orion Samuelson will join us later this hour. Let's go to Sandberg for the results portion of the program. Week 3, hot off the presses. You've done the calculations?
Yes, the nonsense calculations, but I've done them.
Last week, in a stunning upset, the Don't Care team defeated the Do Care team.
Yes.
And the Don't Cares were slightly favored going into this week, just based purely on momentum and dumb luck. So what do we have for individual results before you announce the exciting team results?
Results for week 3. John DeCasse in 10th place with a record low score of 21.
21! 21 is really bad.
Myself, Mary Sandberg Boyle, in 9th place with a 34.
Are you still married to Pat Boyle, Comcast Sportsnet?
I am.
How come you're not using his help for information on stuff like this?
Well, how can he help on something that makes no sense?
Well, there is that. All right, who's in 7th or 8th?
8th place is Bennett Wakenight, 96 points.
Boy, this is running perfectly according to the system.
This isn't going very well.
These are all the don't cares. 7th place, Mr. Steve Cochran.
What?
With 101.
How did that happen?
Wait, tell me again.
7th place, 101 points.
Who is in 8th place?
Who's in 8th?
I am.
Bennett.
And what did Bennett have?
Not much more.
Bennett had 96 points.
101.
101. And with
didn't 100. I win in the first week?
Yes. You're going downhill. And in 6th place, we got 105 with Dave Ennett.
Ooh. I'm ahead of you.
Grzanich, there's hope for us yet.
Mary Vandeveld is in 5th place with 116.
Oh, my God.
You probably didn't even add it, right?
Yeah. Andrea Darlis is in 4th place with 119.
She wasn't even here.
She's not here next.
I know, that was from Greece.
She's out of the country and she finished top 5. That's impressive.
3rd place, which is Steve Grzanich, and Ryan Burrow did his pick, 125 points.
Mm-hmm. Good job, Steve.
2nd place is Mike Jacobson with 128. And your lovely mother, Ann Summers, is in 1st place with 156.
Ah, nice job, Mom.
And she wouldn't answer
Ann
the phone
been
today.
In the top 3, 2 of the 3 weeks. So let's move on to week 4.
Now, my mother wasn't available to do her picks?
Or she's just not taking her calls.
She wanted to stay up on top. That's
so we've got
she has until noon today to get her picks in, or she's out.
Okay. Oh, that's a new
Well,
twist.
That's fine, because she's on
I
your team.
I feel like I'm playing with my stepson. Sometimes he adjusts the rules as we go halfway through a game.
Well, which team won last year?
Actually, my mom could pick
good question,
until...
Dave. We don't care, Dave. The do cares
well, hold on a second.
Did win.
You don't mind if I talk on my own show, do you? My mom could pick until Thursday. As long as she gets her pick to you by Thursday, she'll be fine.
Oh, yeah, because we are doing the picks a little early because you're going to be...
Yeah, because I'm leaving.
Yeah,
right, that's why she wasn't around. Yeah. She's probably getting her hair done or something.
Yeah.
Why don't you leave us your pick and we'll do the picks on Thursday?
Because
yeah,
we're
Steve.
Doing them right now.
So the do cares...
otherwise, it would have been a great idea.
...have a slight edge over the don't cares. They have 1,970 to 1,852. Don't know what that means.
Who won this week, though? This
the
week
do
three.
Cares.
All right, so we've won 2 out of 3.
2 out of 3.
And you guys suck.
Yeah.
But we've got a secret up our sleeve.
Yeah.
That you don't care even more?
Yeah.
Okay.
So watch out.
So let's go to week 4.
Don't give it away.
My first picker is Mike Jacobson.
Mike Jacobson!
Can I get a quarterback?
Oh, I get to go first?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was...
When
I was,
we yelled Mike Jacobson, who did you think I was talking to?
I was talking to Steve Grzanich about his picks this week.
Yeah, great. I was getting advice.
He was getting advice. I'm going to go with Matthew Stafford because he's playing the Bears. Mm-hmm. So that's a safe pick.
All right.
And then my game, I'm going to go Texans over the Titans, 31-21.
Excellent.
Texans over Titans, 31-21.
That's correct.
Next.
Cochran.
Oh, it's me?
Yeah.
Andrew Luck.
All right.
And what game did you pick, Chick?
Texans
and Titans.
I'll always like to go to the Bears. Let's go to the Bears game. Bears Lions at Soldier Field Sunday at 1.
Come on.
This is it. This is the one.
Come on.
Bears 17, Lions 13.
Yes.
So you actually picked the Bears.
Yeah.
I didn't think you'd do it.
Maybe the only time all year. Okay, let's not go crazy. Next.
Okay, Anne, and we'll get her pick another time.
Yes.
Andrea and Ryan Burrow is going to pick for her.
Ryan Burrow.
Yeah.
All right, Ryan, what do you got?
I'll go with Big Ben.
Roethlisberger.
And I'm going to do a close one. Chiefs 18, Steelers 17.
Ooh.
Steelers have some problems, and it's not just the fact that most of their running backs are drug addicts. Thank you, Andrea. Next.
Dave Bennett.
My court, and I should have done this last week. It was a big mistake. Trevor Siemian.
Oh
yeah, there you go.
And my
Broncos, right? Broncos quarterback.
Denver Broncos, former proud Northwestern Wildcat.
Go Cats.
And my game will be Arizona 24, LA Rams 17.
All right, so that's all the do cares. Do you want to take a break before we do don't cares, or should we just...
No, let's see the don't cares.
The don't cares. Bennett.
I'm going to go with Carson Wentz as the QB.
It's probably a good pick.
Dave, you got really excited about that.
I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Why is that?
Because they're not playing.
Oh, they are. Wow.
Let me double check their schedule, but I'm pretty sure.
Is this the first bye week?
Yeah, they have a bye this week. So you can go ahead and take him, Bennett.
Dave, in the true spirit of competition, you would have just let me pick it, and then we would have realized that later down the road when I failed and presented myself.
Yeah, it would have been funnier if you just let him pick it.
Okay. Okay. Yep.
But since you blew the bit, pick a quarterback that is playing.
Apologies. Tyrod Taylor.
You'd be better off taking
that.
Carson Wentz.
Thank you, Dave, for the continuous criticism. And the game I will choose is Panthers over the Falcons, 35-3.
Wow.
It's going to be big.
Blowout. Next.
Mr. John DeCoste is on the phone.
Let's go to John now. Stand by. Morning, John. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Listen, I'm in such a good mood. Did everybody get my picture of my bowl of rainbow sherbet?
We did not, but Sandberg would like you to share it immediately.
I'll be sure to like
it. Yeah, I did.
Facebook.
It's like breakfast for champions. It's phenomenal.
Hey, did you watch the debate?
Yeah, I did.
What'd you think?
Wow.
All right, so what's your pick?
I'm taking, actually two of mine were taken. So I'll take, I don't even know how to say his name, Osweiler.
Osweiler, Brock Osweiler. Osweiler.
Yeah, the big 6'8" guy.
Houston Texans.
Yes, and then I will take the Browns over the Buccaneers, 21-17.
I'm not saying anything.
The Browns are actually playing the Redskins. Yeah. But if you want to take them over the Buccaneers, it's fine, but they're actually playing the Redskins.
I think you meant Broncos, right, John?
Yeah, I can't. Mary wrote this for me, so I can't even read it.
Broncos over the Buccaneers?
Broncos over the Buccaneers.
Broncos.
Reading is not a strong
This is why
point.
You guys are on the don't care team. Next!
Mary Vandeville.
Okay, I haven't been paying attention because I screwed up because I went to Google week 3, and I thought it was week. I think I'm okay. I'll figure it out. Let's see. Did anybody pick Andy Dalton yet?
You did just now.
Okay, I'll pick him.
Okay.
And how about
from the Cincinnati Bengals? You know what this needs, Jake? This needs music underneath it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need some
because
kind of
I'm
music
trying.
Underneath
okay,
it.
So okay, Browns Redskins. No, I don't want that game. how about Tennessee Houston? Did someone pick that?
Yes.
Cleveland, Washington?
Yes.
Nobody picked
John
Cleveland, Washington because nobody wanted to.
I'll go Washington over Cleveland 30-21.
3021. Let's go to your subconscious.
That's a weird
story. Subconscious of Mary Vandeveld, how come you weren't ready to play?
I just told you.
Well, to be honest with you, I snuck in some booze this morning like I did at the dance competition.
That would make sense.
Might have had a little bit too much cab.
I understand. All right, next.
Dave brought it, too.
Next is me, and I'm going to pick Dak Prescott. And I'm going to take Seahawks over the Jets, 31-7.
31-7 Seahawks over the Jets.
And all right. Bringing up the rear is Grzanich.
Yeah. Is there a reason why I'm at the rear? I don't know about that.
Seems right.
Okay. I'm going to take the Colts over the Jaguars.
Okay.
And I believe the Colts quarterback
We need a score.
Okay. Let's see. This is tough. How about 27-23?
27-23. The Colts quarterback's been taken.
Oh, he has?
Yeah, you need another quarterback.
Hmm.
You could ask for
Drew
an assist.
How about Drew Brees?
Drew Brees.
How about
Drew Brees.
Saints Chargers. Drew Brees.
Let me say it like Trump.
Drew Brees. All right, so that's it. Picks are in, right? All except for my mother, the winner of the week three.
Did Andrew pick?
Right. Yes, Ryan Burrow.
Ryan Burrow playing the role of Andre.
Oh, there you go. I'll get Ann's and then...
And we're good to go.
Yeah.
Listener can always chime in. This is Sandberg and Jake's favorite part. Call now at 312-981-7200. And we'll take your pick off the air. John DeCoste, before you hang up, anything you want to say to the people at Governor State?
Oh, they were phenomenal. I cannot thank them enough. We had such a good time. That was so good. I'm just glad. It's too bad you couldn't be there.
What are you talking about? I was there. We had fun. Yes, I was there.
No, I would have introduced you.
It was a fine show and a good time had by all.
Weren't you at the Browns-Buccaneers game?
I was. Yeah, I was actually waiting for the Redskins to show up. But at Governor State, we recommend the theater and the people there. And if you can see a show there, you should. And we'll be back. I mean, there. We'll be back here, too. But we'll do another show there at some point. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. It's 920. The Steve Cochran Show continues next on 720 WGN. I was looking through some tributes to Arnold Palmer. Golf Channel's still going pretty much 24/7 with tributes and just over and over and over again. There's so many stories. You think you know the life story of a public figure and all of these people coming out of the woodwork to tell individual stories about meeting Arnold Palmer and how even a brief meeting made a huge change in their life. And I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. And we were referencing another friend who had caddied for Palmer when he opened a course. And Palmer, not only, like Dr. Most said yesterday, was really good to the group that he was playing golf with. He also went out of his way to work both sides of the fairway and the galleries that were always there to watch him play. So the charitable side has come forward in so many ways. Emil Esposito, my friend Emil, who knew Palmer, was talking to Pat Brady and told Pat Brady, you know, people aren't talking about how good his golf game was. You know, and that's the other part of this. If you're a golf fan, this means a lot to you as well. Because there was a period of time between, 1960 or 61 to about 66 or 67. I mean, there was nobody close. He teed it up, he was going to win. And he won the majority of his tournaments in that short 5 or 6 year period. He also won the 7 majors in that 5 or 6 year period. Missed out on a second U.S. Open again and again and again. He won it at Cherry Hills in a famous story where he overheard a famous golf writer basically telling him he didn't have any chance at all.
Right.
And then he went out on the first tee about a 330 or 40-yard hole back then with much less of technologically savvy equipment and lesser golf balls and drove the green. And off he was. But he also had an open one out in San Francisco. He was up by 5 or 6 shots at the turn, decided he was going to go for the all-time open record, and literally played himself out of the tournament where Billy Casper came back and won. And he never won a PGA. Of the 4 majors, that's the one that got away. And you think of Phil Mickelson. Phil Mickelson's never won a U.S. Open. There's very few guys that have won all 4.
Right. And he actually won the British Open before people in this country paid much attention to it.
He and Ben Hogan were the two people that helped make the British Open a world tournament. And Tiger put the stamp on it, of course, when he came up in 96. But, yeah, if not for Arnold Palmer going over to play it and Hogan making an effort to go over and play it, the British Open would have taken a lot longer to become, you know, one of the big four. So
amazing, amazing.
His wife, Winnie, and Arnold Palmer opened hospitals in the Orlando area and gave away millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. The Arnold Palmer Boyhood Home in Latrobe is going to be open to the public, I think, as soon as today, if it's not already open, where you can go through and you can see kind of a Palmer Museum.
They have a nature reserve there, the Winnie Palmer Nature Reserve at St. Vincent College in Latrobe. That's where, at the college, that's where they're going to have the memorial service next week. But they have invited fans to go to the nature reserve to meditate or just to pay their respects.
It's interesting to note the juxtaposition of positions, right? When you see the blowhard Trump last night, and you see Hillary and you think about all the dishonesty that's come from her, and you think about the honor in the game of golf, and you think about the way Palmer led his life publicly. You know, he was old-fashioned, good old American. You know, Pat Brady described him great yesterday. We were talking. He goes, last man in America, because he was the real deal. Every guy wanted to be his best friend. Every woman wanted to be with him. Arnold Palmer. Hitch those pants up and hit another one 340. It's 9:28. We'll take a break and come back. Steve Cochran Show continues on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show. Well, I got me a fine wife. I got me old fiddle. When the sun's coming up, I got cakes on a riddle. Life ain't nothing but a funny, funny
riddle. Thank God I'm a country boy. Woo-hoo! Time to check in with my friend Orion Samuelson. Well, he's your friend, too. Mary, Dave.
Absolutely.
Hey,
Jake,
go.
Sandberg. Woo-hoo. It's our friend. Good morning, O.
Well, good morning, and a beautiful day in the desert. And I hope it's a beautiful day in the Midwest because I'm soon coming back. So
it is nice here, but it's going to turn sharply colder with the lowest temperatures in 5 months.
Really?
Yeah. May want to change your plans and stay in Arizona for a couple more days.
Yeah, we're 74 right now with clear skies. So
happy anniversary, buddy. I'm sorry I missed it yesterday.
Well, the fact that I get her today is just fine because after 56 years, a day or two doesn't really change anything. So
happy anniversary. Pour a cheerful toast and fill it. Happy anniversary. But be careful you don't spill it. Happy anniversary.
Whoa.
Happy anniversary.
That's Fred, you remembered.
How could I ever forget? Yes, it's
that
the
was stunning.
Flintstones.
I appreciate that.
The Flintstones, happy anniversary.
Well, 56 years ago yesterday, I said for the first time on over a microphone with a WGN sign on it, this is WGN, Clear Channel Radio, serving the nation from Chicago.
It's tremendous. Isolate that, Jake. We're not going to pay him for it. Let's just keep using it.
Well, we're not Clear Channel anymore, unfortunately. We have been duplicated quite a few years ago. But a Clear Channel at that time meant there was not another radio station in the country that had the channel position of 720.
And that meant you could hear the station all over the kids. This is way before the internet. And that meant you could hear the station all over the country.
Oh, at night? As a matter of fact, I would get letters from sailors when they would dock who were listening while they were at sea. And, we covered the nation, really, with no other signal on the 720 dial. So
I think there's one in Las Vegas, isn't there?
Yeah, one in Las Vegas, one in Hartford, Connecticut. And of course, Fidel Castro put a 250,000-watt transmitter on our 720 when John F. Kennedy got involved in the missile crisis with Cuba. And WGN Radio was one of four stations in the country selected by President Kennedy to present a message, a five-minute message in the Cuban language by the president to beam toward Cuba WGN, WWL New Orleans, WLW in Cincinnati, and another station in Florida. And so every night for five nights from midnight to 5 a.m., we would broadcast the message to the Cuban people saying, we're not mad at you, we're mad at your leadership for what they're doing. Yes. And within 6 months, those four stations had 250,000-watt transmitters on their frequency. You could not get WGN on the south side of Chicago. All you could get was Cuban, that Fidel Castro was, you know, trying to get even because we did that to him, and so he was trying to get even.
And how did we eventually move on from that?
Well, it took about 8 or 9 years working through the Swiss embassy because we did not have an embassy in Havana. And so we had to work through the Swiss embassy and finally negotiated an agreement that would move the Cuban station, I think, to 7:30, I think, instead of 7:20. Yeah.
Whatever it takes to make Fidel happy.
Well, and to keep our signal strong in this country, because, you know, with the wave signal at night taking us a lot farther than the Chicago area, the same thing happened with Cuba. They would bounce up and down, and we'd have radio in southern Illinois that was Cuban and south Chicago that was Cuban. It was an interesting time.
No doubt about it. We've talked many times about you being the one to announce that President Kennedy had been shot and eventually had died in Dallas. But through the years, you've been at the mic for many, 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 many things. And what are your top two or three that stand out other than that?
Well, President Kennedy would certainly be one of them because that was probably the most confusing 2 hours I've ever had in radio because all we had was television. We would watch Walter Cronkite. We got a TV set in the studio to watch it. But, you know, there was no internet and there was no way we could get information beyond the fact that the bulletin that came across the teletype said, President Kennedy has been shot in Dallas. And it didn't say if he was alive or dead. It didn't have any other information. And we had to wait probably half an hour before we finally got confirmation from Walter Cronkite that the president had died of his gunshot wounds. And I'm doing an agricultural show at noon. I'm doing markets and I'm doing weather. And this strip of teletype paper is put in front of me in the studio while I'm doing this. I glance over at it, and it was the bulletin. And I thought, you know, that's a dumb trick to play on somebody on the air because we would do things like that, but nothing like that. And I still remember our engineer, Bob Seibold, and Gene Doretti was the newsman who delivered the strip of paper. And I looked up into the control room, and I knew instantly this was not a joke. This was really a serious thing. Well, we couldn't go to music because we had to have a record turner, a union musician in the studio to play records. We were not able to do that because I didn't play records during my hour-long country
fair. Right, so there wasn't a representative available.
No, and he was out to lunch. That was his normal
literally
lunch hour. Yeah, I'm literally out to lunch. So what do? You can't go to music. You can't do any further than say the president has been shot. So I went back to doing the weather forecast, and it was a rainy day in the Midwest. I remember that. It was raining very hard in November, that late in the fall season. So, yeah, there are a few things I think that would come close to that because it was confusing at the time. You know, I didn't know how much history was being made, but it was an interesting time.
Yesterday was the 56th anniversary of the Kennedy-Nixon debate that changed all of this.
Oh, yes.
That was literally the day before you started work at WGN. Do you remember where you were that night?
That night I was in Chicago staying at the Lawson Street YMCA because I had driven down from Green Bay in my 1948 Chrysler New Yorker. That was a big automobile.
That was your pimp mobile.
Yeah, it was. And I stayed at the Lawson Street YMCA to get ready to come into WGN. We were in the tower at that time. We worked in the tower probably 6 months after I arrived in town. And then Bradley Place was completed. They had built that, and so we moved out to Bradley Place. But, yeah, I do remember. And I remember that it was the talk of the town in Chicago. I went to dinner somewhere. I forget where, but, you know, that's all they were talking about.
Yeah, well, Nixon and Kennedy were at the old barn where CBS used to be, Channel
yes.
2, which was literally, what, an eighth of a mile from here?
Yeah, right, toward the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, what I remember more than anything is commentators talking about how Richard Nixon looked very bad because of makeup and he was sweating profusely. And so even at that time, we weren't talking about the critical elements of a government. We were talking about too much sweat on his face.
Yeah, exactly. Not what he could do, what he looked yep. like. What is the biggest change that you've seen in 56 years at WGN? I mean, I know there's a million changes, but is there one thing that really stands out?
Well, the equipment change, no doubt. When I was introduced as farm director coming down from Green Bay, there was an outdoor farm show at the time, the M&W Farm Power Show downstate, down at Gibson City, Illinois. That's where they wanted to introduce their new farm director. And so I flew down from Green Bay and drove down to the site. It took three engineers and a full truckload of equipment to carry that broadcast. We did the Wally Phillips show from there. We did the Fifth Army Band from there. And we had the Bob Trendler Orchestra from there. And it took a truckload of equipment. Now I'm sitting in Arizona with something I can hold in my hand.
Yeah, how about that?
And it sounds like
you're sitting right here.
Yeah, like I'm sitting in the studio. So I would say it's the technology and equipment that is the biggest change, plus the fact that the content has changed a great
sure.
deal.
Sure. Yeah. Last question. When you got here, WGN had been on the air for 25 or 30 years already.
Right.
Who was Orion Samuelson when you got to WGN? Was there someone from the original cast or the first few years of GN that was still working there?
Quinn Ryan would do some appearances, and I think he was one of the original. Engineer-wise, our chief engineer was Carl Meyer, and then his son, Jack Meyer, continued as chief engineer. And the morning show, Holland Engel, was doing the farm material because Norm Kraft, the farm director, had resigned on the air in August. And
why did he resign on the air?
Well, he wanted to join Senator John Kennedy's staff, thinking that if he were elected, he'd be Secretary of Agriculture. He was elected, but Norm did not become Secretary of Agriculture.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's a remarkably shocking thing to do in that era. If you had a problem, you didn't take it public and you didn't take that sort of hey, look at me sort of move, did you?
Well, he resigned on a Friday during the noon hour, and Ward Quall, who believed so strongly that if we're a Clear Channel station, then we serve the agricultural area as well as sure. the metropolitan area. And he was furious about the fact that he did it on the air and walked out. And the next day, I got a call from the program manager at WGN saying, we'd like to talk to you. I couldn't believe it. I didn't think, my golly, I had only been doing this for a couple of years. WGN interested in my joining the company? I'm a kid compared to some of the other well-known names in the farm broadcasting industry in the country. But, I came down. It took me 2 weeks to decide that I would leave Green Bay and come to Chicago because that was the big city. Green Bay was not. And I thought I'd stay 5 years and get WGN on my resume and then move back to Wisconsin, buy a radio station, and spend the rest of my life there. Well, I guess I'm not going to do that now.
I hate to break it to you, but you're on your 12th five-year lap.
True.
You just
still
started.
An intern. Still hoping I'll get a job at WGN.
I don't like your chances. I don't know. It's your attitude, I think. It's the great Orion Samuelson, who, again, you know how much I love bringing this up, has been on WGN 6 months longer than I've been alive. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I ran into some people at, oh, by the way, greetings to the morning show crew from Leo at Tutti Santi.
Ah,
we've been there a couple
great.
Of times.
We love Leo.
And he always points to the picture on the wall
with
the crew.
The best.
And he said, be sure to say hello to all of my friends. And then the next line is, when are they coming back?
You're right. We got to come out. As a matter of fact, I'm taking the next few days off. I was going to go to North Carolina. I'm coming out to see you instead. I'm just coming straight to Arizona.
We'll be ready for you, believe me, and we'll have good weather for you, too. So,
well, happy anniversary. Happy anniversary, buddy. We love you. And it is an amazing, amazing story. And we were talking off the air about this, and I'm not exaggerating when I say this, and Dave brought this up. With Vin Scully stepping down, is there any broadcaster in America with the longevity of Orion Samuelson? You may be it, oh.
Well, I have been told by historians, and the definition here is the broadcaster who has been with the same entity for the longest time. And I think Vince Scully had 68 years. I don't think I'll catch him. I've got 56, but I've been told that there is no other broadcaster in the country that has been with the...
Could imagine.
Because we do a lot of changing in the broadcast industry,
amen
but
that.
Once I got here, nobody else wanted me, thank God.
Well, thank goodness Vin moved along so we could get the real king up there. Thank you, buddy.
Okay.
And we'll talk to you soon. It's 9:54.